hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell, Jeff Chaney, and Todd Singer.
Welcome to the No Better Than Average podcast. This is episode 111. This is Todd Singer. I'm here with my co-hosts, Jacob and Jeff. Hello, guys.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Let me throw out a few links and such. You can visit us at our blog, nobettershow.com. You can visit us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/nobettershow. And if you would like to support the show, there's always Patreon, patreon.com/nobettershow. So we're recording a little bit later in the week than normal. Did you guys have a good New Year's?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, I did. It was very uneventful. It's a lot quieter than it used to be. My daughter had a couple friends over. We played some board games. We watched some TV. We watched the train wreck that was Mariah Carey. And live even. And yeah, it was all good.
That is awesome. I managed to catch, I think, gastroenteritis that my wife had just recovered from. So ouch. She was on the upswing New Year's Eve, and I apparently was on the downswing, and I have been nursing a nasty case of stomach flu for the last few days. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's not been a lot of fun. And I will tell you something that someone had mentioned to me last year, which turned out to be awesome when you have a little one that you do not want to let stay up until midnight, is apparently Netflix makes about a dozen different kids countdowns. So they have, they have a couple of tween ones that we ended up watching one of those, but they've got like, what's the hot thing? Skylanders. They've got a Skylanders one. They've got, there's 8 or 10 of them. And they're like, between 2 and 4 minutes long, and you can do the New Year's countdown with your kid and then send them to bed at 9 o'clock the way God intended, so that then we can be wild and crazy partiers where my wife basically laid on the couch kind of going, oh, I don't feel good. And I put together a Revell model. We started a tradition a couple of years ago of doing like a little craft and arts project because we're old and we don't go out partying. And I thought, oh, that'll be fun. I'll build a model. I haven't built a model in, 20 years. And I built a model. That was kind of neat.
We actually had people over on the 30th and did our New Year's evening then, I suppose. And we pretty much broke up by about, 10:30. By the way, before I forget, you can also call in and leave a comment for us, 317-643-1212, like fan of the show Howie did a couple weeks ago. Let us know what you would like to hear about in 2017, what New Year's resolutions that we should promise to make and then forget about the next week, whatever.
I do want to point out, a listener tracked me down and told me, hey, you know your clip show? And I said, yeah. She said, yeah, I just fast-forwarded right to the end. And I'm like, well, why did we even bother then? So thank you for that shot to the old self-confidence. We always appreciate that.
I listened to it and heard some of the things, from the list that I'm like, oh, maybe I need to go back and check that out.
Yeah, I went deep back into the archives, pulling up, I think, our very first episode. So that was kind of a blast from the past.
Oh, my.
Now, you had mentioned resolutions, Todd, and I had a question for the two of you, because obviously as TV personalities and whatnot are wont to do this time of year, everybody is talking about their resolutions for the new year and how they're going to make themselves better. And I'm curious, because I am totally, I am not a top 10 list guy. I am not really a resolution guy. And I'm curious if you, where you guys come down on making resolutions or the top 10 best X of 2016 or whatever. Does it just drive you batty?
My New Year's resolution is to get a job.
That's a good one.
And work.
Cha-ching.
That's it. I figure that's good enough, right?
That's a pretty good
one. So first of all, yeah, it's really hard to make myself better. But, I do feel like I should try every year. It's basically the traditional weight loss and just continuing to walk around the mall. Now I have access to an easy access to a mall.
I thought you were going to vow to show like two more emotions than you did last year.
Oh,
I mean two.
I mean, I did aloof. I guess I can add the stoic and pensive, but we'll see. Well, maybe just one of them.
I was just curious because all of the resolutions and top 10 best lists, they drive me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't mind the top 10 lists as much. I mean, I like looking back at stuff, but you know, yeah, I think as far as resolutions go, I mean, you should be trying to do the best you can every day, right? I mean, that's a thing. Nah, right?
Humans aren't really wired for that though. I think it was on a Freakonomics episode that people are good at saying, okay, I'm going to turn over a new leaf. I'm going to change this aspect of behavior, and we can stick to it for 1 to 2 months. So probably an optimal strategy is to just kind of have something different that you want to work on every 2 to 3 months, and then you know you'll at least get a little bit of improvement in several areas.
Yeah, but don't they also say that if you can do something consistently for about 3 weeks, that you can develop it into a habit?
Yep.
So if we can stick with it for 2 months and it only takes 21 days to develop a habit, then how come we're always back at the beginning of the year setting all of these resolutions? I'm not going to get drunk at the Christmas party and embarrass myself next year.
Because food is good.
Yes,
that is true.
Chocolate tastes really awesome, and so do like fried things.
Oh,
and if you could combine the two, fried things with some kind of chocolate, it's like the best thing ever.
I think you've just described a donut frosted with chocolate.
One of my
would
standard...
you say no to a donut frosted with chocolate right now?
Oh,
I think not.
God, no. I would. That would be the best thing in the world right
One
now.
Of my standard comebacks when someone makes some kind of declaration that I find impossible. For example, gosh, I really wish Bright House had good customer service. I'll say, yes, and I wish chocolate had no calories. You know, I can wish for it all I want. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be nice.
That was a poor example, by the way, because I actually did get actual human customer service from Bright House on Sunday night, Christmas night, whatever you want to say. It was over Twitter.
Oh,
but
wow.
They did help me diagnose some issues that I was having.
Because that's what everyone should be doing Christmas Eve into Christmas, is trying to diagnose problems with the internet, not having
Wi-Fi wasn't working right.
Sugar plums. Well, I mean, that is good. And I know people get the big companies get a bad rep, but I've had success dealing with Comcast over Twitter and their customer support. It's hit or miss, I suppose. I also have a friend on Facebook who, over the last 2 months, Comcast has overbilled him to the tune of $500-some, and he's fighting to get that resolved. So,
yikes.
You got to take the bitter with the sweet, right?
That's a lot of overbilling.
It
unless
is.
He's on some like huge plan.
No. It's $500-some over, like, in addition to the hundreds of dollars that they're probably already getting from him, they've decided, hey, we want an extra $500. And from the tone of some of the posts I've seen, it looks like they actually reached in and took it. So it's more of a case of not, hey, can you fix my bill so I can send you money? It's more of a, hey, can you fix my bill? And by the way, give me back all of this money that you have taken from me to the tune of an extra $500. So yes, I don't know where he's at with that, but it does not sound fun. Which is why I am not a fan of bill pay that I don't initiate. I don't like letting vendors come in and take money. I much rather would push my money out to them for that very reason. And they look at me weird when I say it's okay that they charge me an extra dollar for a manual paper bill or something like that. No, that's fine, because then you don't get to come and take what you think you can take. Get off my soapbox.
I don't know. I've had account sweep billing for years. I've not personally had an issue, so
and 99% of the time I'm sure you don't, but that 1%.
And with all the money that's raining in from the podcast, I don't really have to worry about my bank account getting thin.
Oh you're so funny.
Oh that kills me.
Yeah.
Jeff is really, it's a bit that Jeff is looking for a job because he's got all of this internet money.
I got all this internet money, man.
Rolling in it.
If I could just get the electric company to take that internet money as payment, I'd be golden.
Well, you give them internet money and they'll give you internet electricity. I'm pretty sure
they'll email it to you, the electricity.
You know, I saw a interesting website last week that I really like, and I wanted to mention it to everybody. I had never seen it before, but it is called cheapanduseful.com, all spelled out, CHEAPANDUSEFUL.com. And it appears to be, I mean, they build themselves as useful products you'll actually use for under 25 bucks. And it looks like it's primarily links to stuff on Amazon, and some of it is stuff that I don't know that I would have a use for, and you know, other stuff is actually looks like a pretty good deal. Like I'm looking at this as we are recording it, and it is ever changing because that's kind of their thing. But you know, some of the deals are it looks like they've got a crock pot that you can go get on Amazon right now for like under 13 bucks. So if you need a crock pot, that seems nice. Like a good price for a crock pot. I don't know.
Yeah.
It also says auto shut off power outlet. Wait a minute, is it the crock pot or is it power?
You know
what?
You're right. Ah, they got me. It's the outlet, not the crock pot. I wanted to see. I was thinking, hey, I could use a new crock pot. All right. So maybe that's not so great, but they do have. I have seen some other things on here that I'm like, hey, I would get that.
So I'm looking at all these things on here. None of them are useful. Like, there's none of those.
You don't need a watermelon slicer?
No, that's called a knife. That's a unitasker. You don't want a unitasker? Piece of crap. No, I don't. And a perfect pancake maker? Are you kidding me? Ridiculous.
Okay, I will say this. I have read that the poopery spray actually works really well. I've also
heard that.
Yeah.
Two-in-one knife chopping board? You don't want a pair of scissors that's a knife and a chopping board in one? Okay, admittedly, this is a really bad example. When I looked at this last week, it was actually a couple of gadgets that I thought, hey, it's not so bad.
Motion-activated toilet light, I'm digging that.
Okay, I have a funny story. Apparently, they are awesome.
Pretty colors.
My sister bought one as a joke for her husband. Is a gag gift, I believe, for his birthday. And they got it, and ha-ha, isn't this funny? And, of course, nothing would do, but their little boy insisted they install it because it's something that lights up, and so they did. And she's like, you know what? It's actually fantastic because it knows when you go into the bathroom at night, and it's just bright enough, and it's in just the right place to do what you're doing without blinding you. You don't have to turn on the light. She said, actually, it's fantastic, and that they will never not have one of these motion sensing LED toilet
lights. Right there,
before.
You go. You should order three and give Todd and I
cheap and useful.
And it's got eight different colors in it. Mm-hmm. All yours for the low, amazingly low price of just $11.99. But anyway, I thought that was a neat website. So okay, 1 out of 12, maybe one out of 12.
Still, it's something to go back to, right?
That's right. Check it because it changes.
They can't all be hits.
No, it is just like this show.
That's right. 1 out of every 100, we'd swing it and hit it right out of the park.
So we've got to be due for at least one, and then here like another 90 shows. That's right.
And we are under $25. So there you go.
For the low price of nothing. I also saw a interesting story a couple weeks ago about a new data center that Facebook is opening in Prineville, Oregon. Apparently, it is becoming a hotbed, I tell you, of the tech sector. It's a bustling metropolis with a population of 9,200, and it is literally in the middle of BFE, Oregon. There is nothing nowhere around it. And they have built a couple of buildings there, a couple of data centers. Their smallest one is over 350,000 square feet, and they've got one that they're currently getting ready to bring online at over 450,000 square feet. So, I mean, think like Super Walmart. That's how big these things are. And they're doing something interesting. They're actually using outside air to cool the data centers, which providing additional power to their auxiliary systems through solar panels, because obviously cooling is one of the largest electrical expenses for a data center. And apparently it is cool enough, long enough in Prineville, Oregon, that they can, through some tricky architecture of their servers and fans and just the outside lower ambient temperature, they can keep their data centers mostly cooled, relying on dust filters and fans. Yeah, apparently Silicon Valley likes to mimic each other. Now that Facebook has facilities, Apple is following suit, and they are building a huge data center there too. And the other thing I thought was really cool is this article mentioned that Facebook is housing their cold storage facilities there, which they said when traffic the traffic to your data on Facebook falls off enough, and it's all, you know, determined algorithmically, it is moved over to their cold storage servers. There were really not very many details on how those were set up differently from their daily production equipment. I don't know if it's lower power equipment, you know, slower equipment, but there was one note that kind of blew me away. You know, there's a picture of this cold storage facility, which is just rack after rack after rack of equipment. And they said each rack in their cold storage facility holds 2 petabytes of data. So that's 2,000 terabytes. And you got to think, I mean, the amount of data that Facebook has got its hands around.
So many pictures.
Just,
so many pictures.
Yeah, I mean, you joke, but it's like, I think on the order of hundreds of billions of pictures that are uploaded to Facebook. And I mean, you got to store it somewhere.
And dogs.
I uploaded a squirrel video today.
Ooh,
so
I saw
they
this
got that
squirrel
going.
Video.
Sweet.
And you know, if you do a quick search, how many pictures does Facebook have? The internet. Apparently, I need
all.
New batteries.
The answer is all. They have all the
pictures. My keyboard. Yeah, I mean, I know I've seen numbers before, and this makes for scintillating podcasting, waiting for my computer to decide if it's going to respond to me. But if you do go and look on the Bing Maps or the Google Maps, you can see this Prineville, Oregon. There is a whole lot of nothing there, and then a huge, huge cluster of buildings that is the Facebook facility. And apparently, right across the street is where Apple is building theirs. Now, what's funny is the article mentions that Facebook is quite upfront about it. They've got big signs that say Facebook, and you know, you can like drive by, and it's the Facebook building, and Apple's completely nondescript.
Maps was Prineville, Oregon, so I wasn't even searching on it. It's right next to the Prineville Airport.
Yeah, that's right next to the Prineville, like, hospital. I mean,
doesn't
there's,
it seem like Elon's data center would be? Nobody? Prineville?
Oh,
Prineville.
But it's not Prime, it's in. P-R-I-N-E, Prime.
We need to enunciate better. I thought you were saying Prime.
No, Prime.
Apparently, I'm guessing by the name of the high school, but it's in Crook County. So
that's where the data centers are.
Yeah, goes to get stolen, maybe.
Okay, so this is a headline.
Oh, it says Apple Data Center, too, not too far.
Yeah, but I don't think there's any outside otherwise indications that, like, so, there's big signs that say Facebook out on the road, but there are no signs that say Apple.
So there's probably a Google Data Center here, too, but that's not showing up on Google Maps. They're just identifying the other two.
Well, the only two that they listed in the article were Facebook and Apple.
Yeah.
So this has got to just scramble your noodle a little bit. This is an article from Business Insider dated September of 2013. So ancient by technology standards. And in 2013, Facebook stated that users upload 350 million new photos per day. Oof. So figure that out. That was two and a half years ago. No, 3 years ago. What?
500 million by now, at least.
350 million new photos uploaded every day. And it says every day. And it says, and again, keep in mind, this is September of 2013, that on average, each of their 1.15 billion users had uploaded 217 photos on average. So that's what, 250 billion photos in their collection. So yeah, they probably have a little bit stored. And I don't see anything that is a more updated statistic than a few years ago. And I think we actually talked about this on the podcast, earlier this year, about all of these fantastic numbers out of Facebook, but they're all 2 or 3 years old. And so can you even imagine what they are now? They just haven't.
I mean, they've more than tripled, I'm sure.
Oh, God. I just can't even imagine.
And presumably those are all from all over the world that are being stored there in Oregon, I'm guessing.
You know, I don't know, because I know that they're, and I can't speak intelligently about it, and that is par for the course for the show, but I know that there has been legislation in other countries that demand that Facebook and other such social companies store user data from those countries in data centers in those countries. So,
jobs Facebook, program.
Yeah, I mean, it's Facebook more has data centers all over the world.
That data.
Probably a little bit more from column Jeff than from column Todd.
Yeah, that's my guess. I mean, how many jobs can it really be to have a data center? It's not. I mean, it's not that there aren't any jobs, but it's more that they want to be able to get at that data.
Yeah, a couple dozen,
and
probably.
They couldn't get to the data if it was in the U.S.
Yeah,
and not as easily.
And then to really blow your mind, I don't think Facebook has any significant presence in China. So that's a billion and a half people right there that are completely untapped. I'm sure
that's
a lot
of cat pictures.
Yeah, that is. I'm sure that they are salivating and trying to figure out how to make a deal with the Chinese government.
All I'm thinking is you're saying cats and salivating, and I'm like, yeah, they take a lot of dinner pics.
And we lost the last of our Chinese listeners.
Come on, no one in China listens to this show.
We could have people of Chinese descent, Chinese heritage.
Well, yeah, that doesn't count. They're Americans. They can make fun of those Chinese people too.
Oh, Lord. I promise the views of Jeff do not necessarily reflect those of the show.
All I'm saying is, that Chinese restaurant we went to all the time when we worked together up there, it was right next to that vet. I'm just saying.
It was. And you know what? Darn good food.
It was really good.
And honestly, I think that if we went back there now, how long has it been since we've been there? I mean, years, right?
Over years, a couple of years, probably.
The last time I remember going was right before I started working for you. And that was five years ago. I guarantee you, if we went there for lunch now, we would walk in and she would bring us the food that we used to order.
That's probably true, because we always ordered the same thing, and we went there once a week at least.
Quite a lot, and her memory was a steel trap. So,
yep.
Jeff, I noticed as you were flailing about, you are still rocking your Apple Watch. Looked like you had a new band for it, even, maybe.
Yeah,
bright orange or red.
Did you see that? Right? It's orange leather.
Nice.
Wife got it for me for Christmas.
Very cool. So did you see that the wearables market is doing terrible? The sky is falling.
Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah.
You know, I don't know if I believe all of these things.
I don't know.
I don't know. Let me put it this way. They can have my watch when they pry it from my cold, dead hand. Because I love it. And I mean, if I were in the situation that I'm in right now, I would have had an Apple Watch, a new one already.
The Series 2.
Yeah, the Series 2. But being in the situation that I'm in, I've decided to, be somewhat intelligent and not throw out, $450 on a new watch. But I really kind of want one pretty bad. I'd really like to get one of those Nike ones.
You probably
strip down some parts from your Volkswagen before you trade it in for $450. Some metal.
That is. I listened to the show that I wasn't on because I was under the weather during that time, and that is just the crap. I mean, people are just horrible. They're just horrible. Well, seriously,
does this surprise you?
Yes, it does. Because gosh darn it, come on, man. I mean, they're doing their best to make it right, and we are coming out so far ahead. We turn ours in on January 16th, okay, I think.
Right.
We have it scheduled, mm-hmm. and we're getting like $15,000 in cash back. And think about that. Like, we've had this car for over 4 years.
Yeah.
We spent, I don't know, right around $30,000, which, is a lot of money. But we've had the car for 4 years and we're going to end up getting $15,000 back. So for 4 years of usage of a car, I mean, that's a, I wish I could make that deal every time. It's like, dude, that's not much money.
No,
when it comes down to it.
But I mean, it is sort of unusual circumstances. It's not just like a run-of-the-mill, we're getting a 50% rebate.
Like, I could understand if, like, Volkswagen was screwing people left and right. Like, oh, you can bring it back to us and we'll give you a grand. And then I could see, like, okay, you know, I'm going to read the verbiage, and yeah, I'm going to screw them over because they're sticking it to us and shape. But they're not. I mean, they're just not. They're making it as right as they possibly can. And so, I feel like...
Well, what you're saying is, like, you're not going to cheat them to get a new Apple Watch. And that is not the American way.
I'm not going to cheat them to get a new Apple Watch. That's ridiculous. When I heard that, I was like, you have got to be kidding me. I mean, that is just the crappiest of crap. It just makes me sick. Seriously, like, that, it's just not right.
It's not right. It's not right. But you know, when has being right ever stopped people from being horrible, horrible humans?
But you know what? People shouldn't be like that. I mean, do the right thing. Usually you're saying that about companies, and people are like, yeah, you know, companies are only going to do what they have to do. Well, you know, come on, people. Just,
I agree. I mean, it is easy to be tongue in cheek about it, but yes, I think that is a terrible thing to do and people shouldn't do it.
I've been kind of on the lookout for smartwatch deals, especially now with the phone that I've got. Tracking, it's not the phone, but I'm using the health app. I mean, my old phone had it too. I just never used it. Mm-hmm. So now that I'm using it, and last night I went and played old man's tennis for a couple hours, and I'm like, dang it, it's not counting my steps. My phone isn't counting my steps because it's just sitting in my bag. I need a watch.
Isn't there supposed to be a new Samsung one come out this
Google.
Year or something?
Google Q1 is saying that they're going to release a couple, and I just saw another company name I hadn't seen before, although this specifically for women's watches. So there is some new stuff coming down the pike, and of course there's like wearables 2.0 is mm-hmm. supposed to be out early in 17 as well.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting how Apple sort of entered the market primarily focused on fashion, and they have done a hard pivot to fitness. And the article that to segue back to the notes that I got this from is from eMarketer, and they had reported that Apple Watch and Fitbit originally were expected to grow 60% year over year 2015 to 2016, and they are now cutting their estimate down to 25% growth, saying that smartwatches in particular have failed to impress customers. Unlike other device categories, wearable devices have struggled to gain traction beyond early adopters, and with smartwatches, consumers struggle to find a reason to buy. And it's interesting because I have sort of waffled a bit, and I've worn a traditional watch for a while, and I've tried to put my Apple Watch back on. And you know, one of the things that initially that I really, really liked about the Apple Watch, and I still think it is probably one of the killer features, is the notifications. But after having worn a non-smartwatch for, I don't know, a month and a half probably, I put my Apple Watch on, I guess, the week after Christmas, and one of the things that started driving me crazy was how often the thing was pinging at me and notifying me and reminding me to stand and reminding me to breathe and to do this and to do that. And I ended up, like, turning all of it off because I kind of liked not being knocked on my wrist every 5 minutes for some kind of a notification. I still mm-hmm. totally get the appeal, but I also really like the idea of a mechanical contraption on my wrist. And Apple has, like I said, pivoted hard towards the fitness aspect. Apparently, according to this article, people just aren't buying. It goes on to say Apple hasn't convinced everyone that a smartwatch is something they need, especially given the higher prices compared with standard fitness trackers. Although I know, Jeff, you have made the argument that if you're going to spend $300, you're going to spend $150 anyway for a Fitbit, and closer to $200 if you want one that has GPS and all that. Who's its and what's its, you know, you're not that far off from buying a smartwatch. And why wouldn't you buy the smartwatch to get the other features, which I totally agree with if you're going to go down that road.
Right.
And, you know, but the clear use case, I think, is probably fitness tracking. And I don't know that there is really that, you know, super killer app yet for the wearables. And, you know, interestingly, someone I work with was actually just, gifted or re-gifted a smartwatch from their kid who had one and went, you know, they ended up switching. They got the Note 7 and then switched to Apple when they did the recall and all that, and had some sort of a I don't even know the Android Wear. They had an Android Wear of some kind and gave it to their dad. And so he's been wearing it. And even he's like, this thing's kind of stupid. Like, it doesn't really, I don't need it. It doesn't do anything for me. I don't know. I just, uh-huh. I feel like I, I see or hear a lot of that. And I was just curious because I know, like I said, Jeff, you're still a big advocate of it, and didn't know how you felt about that. But apparently the,
you know,
go ahead.
I have teased with you guys that I've considered switching over to Android, and I got to thinking the other day, I can't do that because I really love my Apple Watch too much. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I really enjoy it, and I use, there's two or three apps I use, and, you know, quite honestly, I don't use a ton of apps on it, but, you know, messages, being able to get messages on my watch, being able to, you know, do the fitness thing, I just find it very useful, and I just like the watch. I like the way it fits. It's comfortable. I like my Mickey Mouse on it, and, you know, it's a nice watch to me. I like being able to change bands out and you know, very easily. So, yeah, I'm probably stuck in the Apple ecosystem unless Google comes out with something, you know, better than I've seen so far.
Now, do you know, Todd, any of the specifics of what Google has been rumored to be bringing out this year?
There's no specifics yet, except Q1. They're supposed to have the one specific they've said is it will not be Pixel branded.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if it's going to be a Nexus watch or something completely different, but it's supposed to be out by Q1 2017. And also they'll be talking about all of the specific wearables 2.0 software. So I'm definitely going to wait and see what that is like before doing anything. But I am sort of intrigued.
Now, Google doesn't actually make a watch platform. They just make the software, right? They don't actually have piece of hardware.
So, and I assume it'll be, you know, in conjunction with somebody else that makes it, but even that hasn't been released yet.
Well, but the Pixel's not like the HTC Pixel or Pixel by HTC. Right. I mean, it is the Google Pixel, and it just so happens that HTC is the manufacturer. So
that's correct.
I was just curious if the rumored Google watch would be like that, where it's like the Google X watch, or if it's, you know, something by, you know, HTC or Xiaomi or something like that.
The way that I took the article, it is going to be Google branded, much like the Pixel. Just it will not use the Pixel name. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, they're ramping up their hardware division in general. Sure. So
yeah,
that'll
be
another thing that they want to add, I think.
Yep. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, yeah, I thought that was an interesting article that, you know, wearables were certainly like the big thing in the last year or so, and apparently not as big as analysts were originally predicting. Now, the one thing that I haven't heard, and I don't know if you've heard numbers, Jeff, or not, is I know originally they were saying Apple was going to ship something like 15 million Apple Watches in 2016. I don't know that I ever heard a final number. I mean, I'm assuming that that they are far and away the biggest smartwatch maker, even if the numbers aren't where people say the market should be.
Yeah, I haven't heard any exact numbers. I can tell you this, though. They're still hard to get.
Are they, like, the Series 2?
Yeah. Like, they're still not, like, in stock. Like, just go buy one. You have to order it.
Hmm.
And it's still 2 or 3 weeks out, so they're still not meeting the demand. I mean, I don't know how many that means they made, but, you know, they're still in demand. I can tell you that.
Is it a supply demand, or is it supply constraint? I'm curious.
I don't know the answer to that,
because they were pretty clear with the iPhone 7 that it was a supply constraint. It was not.
I can't imagine what would be constraining the supply on this.
There's not much there other than I guess the chip, the system on a chip is a little different,
but that's it.
There's a GPS in there. I think a little bit bigger battery. I don't remember. Maybe a hair bigger. I don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
If we're ready to move on, I wanted to give a quick review to the listeners of these.
These pretentious white headphones. Everyone knows that you have an iDevice of some kind.
That's right. So these are my Beat Solo 3s.
I kind of like how they fold in on themselves.
You can see they fold in onto themselves, and it comes with a little case. I don't have it with me, or I would show it to you, that these fit in. And then they fold out. They're nice and sturdy when they're folded out. Mm-hmm. So I got the Beat Solo 3 in white because, you know, it was the cheapest. That's literally the reason I got them in white.
Cool.
Probably wouldn't have been my first choice, but it was like $20 cheaper. So, you know. Huh.
I would think white would be more expensive because that is so identified with, like, Apple.
Yeah. So this is my first ever pair of Beats headphones. I am kind of a headphone snob, and I quite honestly have in the past kind of poo-pooed Beats as kind of being the Bose of our generation. And these are really good headphones for listening to music. You know, they are a little bass heavy, but it's in a good way. For, you know, like if you're listening to rock music and stuff like that, it's good. I really enjoy it. It has the W1 chip in it, and it is foolproof, easy, and unbelievably amazing. I know I talked to you guys a little bit about it. You know, what advantage that gives you, if I'm listening to these, I don't have them turned on right now, because if I did, it would actually come up and try to take over my headphones and microphone on the computer. Because what it does is it knows where you are and what you're using. And so if I'm connected to my iPod and I come sit in on the computer, and start working on the computer, it will just switch over to the computer.
What if you're listening to music on your phone?
It'll still play the music, but it'll also play what's going on the computer.
Oh, so you'll have simultaneous streams.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And if I start working on my iPad, it'll connect to my iPad.
That's pretty nice.
It is absolutely amazing. They are just great. They are expensive. I happen to do all my parents' Christmas shopping for them, basically. They give me a budget. So I bought these for myself for Christmas from my parents.
Merry Christmas to me from Mom. Yeah.
And I got them on Black Friday, and I got them for a really good deal. So, you know, that part of it was good. But man, they are amazing. I wish everyone could buy them, because they're really good. They are on the ear, so some people don't like that. They're not huge, but they're very comfortable. I have no problems wearing them. I even wear them when I'm laying on the couch, and I don't have any problems with them.
How are they for long listening sessions?
I've fallen asleep with them. I had them on for hours.
Really?
And I will tell you, I've charged them once since I got them for Christmas. They hold battery like it's amazing. If you power them up, I don't want to power them up, because it might confuse my computer.
Yeah, let's not do that.
But they have five little LED dots that tell you what your battery charge is.
Right.
On one side, that's where the power button is. The other side, the B is pause and play or answer the phone. And then if you push on the ring above it up, it turns the volume up. And if you push below it, it turns the volume down. The only disadvantage that I can point out at this time, well, I can think of two things. One, it doesn't have a forward or reverse button, which to me should be pretty easy to do. They should make these rings, you know, mm-hmm. one way forward, one way reverse. Uh-huh. So you can't skip tracks, which is unfortunate. I think that's kind of a little bit of a letdown. The only other ding I'm going to give against them is they do come with a wire if you want to use them wired. And it has the little inline Apple controls.
Okay.
But it isn't Lightning.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. And it's like, seriously, guys, you know, these came out after you have an iPhone 7 that is, you know, now I understand that you can use these headphones with any, you know, thing you want. Todd could buy these headphones and use them. He wouldn't get the advantage of the W1 chip, but they'd still work with Bluetooth. But I just feel like they should have come with a Lightning connector.
Well, that's not so, the courageous that, model.
Yeah, exactly. I guess, you know, I don't know if the red ones are the courageous model. I don't know. But yeah, two thumbs up. They're really amazing. I mean, I cannot tell you. I love them so much. And not having wires is really useful. So
yeah. Now, do they do the Siri integration in them like the AirPods do?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So you can trigger and so you could, in theory, change tracks with Siri.
Yes, I could push on it. And I can't use the H, like the word, the phrase,
right.
Hey, Shlomo. You have to push and hold the B, okay. And then it'll come up. But yeah, I mean, I could do that if I really wanted to, but I just feel like they should have had the button. I know that there are some Bose wireless headphones that are really highly touted in the wireless market as well, and they have the forward and back. So
yeah, that's probably have a higher price tag too.
Not that much higher,
really.
No, yeah, no. I mean, the Beats are spendy. I mean, the retail price on the Beats are $299. I happened to get them for $210, which is still a lot of money. But I didn't think it was that bad. And
no.
I kind of feel like, you know, they seem very well constructed, and that's the only thing I think the ear pads will end up getting dirty because they're white.
The higher end headphones, you can usually replace the ear pads. Is that true in the Beats too?
You can as these as well. And if I do ever have to replace them, I will probably replace them with black ear pads, even though they're white earphones.
Panda Beats.
Yeah. Cause you know, who doesn't want to look like a panda? And they're kind of cool. Cause if you put them under your head this way, you look like a guy from, Empire Strikes Back.
a little bit. And let the record show, Jeff is putting them on his temples with the band going around the back of his head. So everybody at home can get a good visual picture. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to do something. We keep getting threatened with the open office concept is coming, and I don't know what that something that I am going to do is. I am very much enamored by the W1 chip since I am heavily into the Apple ecosystem. That's very appealing. I also like the idea on the AirPods of being able to pop one in and still have an ear exposed to the world, and it switches and does all that automatically with being mono. Segue, iFixit just came out and declared the AirPods impossible to repair, giving it a repairability score of zero. -0 even, saying that the new wireless earphones, the AirPods, they are now available to customers. However, they are probably completely irreparable. They did a tear down and found that the earphones are not just irreparable, but they may also be unrecyclable, which is kind of going against Apple's tradition of creating devices that don't end up as e-waste. And I know Apple has even made a bunch of noise over the last few years about how they continue to improve the recyclability of their products. They also, iFixit came out and claimed that the AirPods were poorly constructed, saying that accessing any component of the device is impossible without destroying the outer casing. The reliance on glue to hold together internal components is an obstacle in repairing the earphones. They also said that this is a quote from the article, as we begin to pull out the boards, cables, and other bits, we're reminded of a certain wearable repair nightmare. If jamming complex components into a small form factor and sealing it with copious amounts of glue were game, Apple would be winning. What remains in the earbud is a hot mess of cables and adhesive. And they also said that they found gaps in soldering, something that Apple is not particularly known for having on their internals. They usually have a pretty high standard of the workmanship on the inside there. Maybe they're not as great as they seem. There's also the concern of what happens if you lose one of them? Apparently, Apple has said that you can buy replacement AirPods for $99. You don't get the fancy little charging case, which pushes that price up to, $159, I think it is, if you lose your pair. But other than that, if you damage the case, your only alternative seems to be buying a new set. iFixit is insinuating that maybe the earphones were rushed to market rather than being properly worked on. So obviously, Apple's not saying. I'm sure that they are selling like hotcakes. I haven't seen any numbers on that. I mean, I'm intrigued. I certainly would like to try some before I would commit the money because, 159 bones is that's a lot for, especially for headphones that by every instance I've read are no better than the wired earphones, which are okay. They're not spectacular, but they pump music into your head, but they're certainly not a good enough seal for me to like go out and cut the grass with the standard ear pods. They just don't seal out enough noise. So I don't know. Is this a good thing for Apple, or is it a misstep? I mean, it seems like Apple's been making some missteps lately with some of their hardware choices and whatnot. I mean, what do you guys think?
I can tell you, if you order now, you can get them in 6 weeks.
six wow. Weeks. What is this, 1980?
I'm just saying, like, again, is that demand? Is that because of demand or is that because of supply? I don't know. But all I know is if you want one, you're going to wait 6 to 8 weeks.
Wow.
So
I can't imagine people are making their purchase decisions based on repairability scores.
Probably not.
If they're reliable, it's fine, I guess.
I think that the soldering not being complete and stuff is probably more troublesome to me than repairability. I mean, honestly. But if they really are finding gaps in soldering and that the actual quality isn't good, that's troubling.
And admittedly, it was one pair that they tore down. So, I mean, it could have just been one unit that didn't get through the reflow solderer as well. I mean, who knows? Those things are so tiny and there's so much complexity in assembling them. But I don't know. I mean, like, I kind of like the idea of being able to replace a battery in a year if the battery life is starting to go to crap. And it doesn't sound like that's even an option. Like, I could do it in my phone. It's going to be a pain in the butt, but it's at least doable. But it doesn't sound like that's even an option, because I think to even get into the things, they had to use a blade and cut down the length of the ear tube, or whatever they call that thing that hangs down like the mucus drop from your ear, because it's just like literally like they may make the thing and then they shoot it full of hot glue and then jam the two pieces together, and there's no coming apart from that. So I don't know, I'm in the market for something. I just don't know what that something is. I don't know if it's a pair of Beats. I like the idea of the W1 chip. I don't know if it's a pair of AirPods. I don't know if it's a Bose noise canceling thing. I don't know what I'm gonna do, Jeff.
I'm in a similar boat, as I mentioned to you guys off the air. The thing that I learned about walking in the mall, malls are really loud.
Yeah.
And I've just been using a little pair of cheap earbuds that just kind of fit. They have the hook that goes over my ear, so they stay in and they're nice, but I can't hear anything through them when I go through the mall. So two things. One, I found some, instead of going for the $350 Bose QC30s, which look amazing, and I actually heard from one of our listeners, John, that he got them for his wife, and she loves them, especially on airplanes. I happened to go out to Newegg and saw that MPOW, that I've had good luck with overall, had a pair of noise-canceling over-the-ear headphones for, like, wireless, for, $52. And I thought about it. I didn't pull the trigger. And then, of course, 2 days later, I went back, and they were $35.
Nice.
And so I pulled the trigger. So they're on the way. I'm going to give those a shot. But in the meantime, I broke back out some Shure 215s that Jeff recommended to me about a year ago. And those are great.
And those are the in-ear monitors, right?
They're the in-ears, and the problem I had with them was with my old phone case, they wouldn't actually fit in my old phone case. So I set them aside, got them back out. They fit fine in my case for my new phone, and I had to turn it way down because I'm like, oh, I can hear. I can hear so much better than the cheapo headphones that were, I mean, they're Sony, but they're just cheap earbuds. Right. So now
those
I've got
are nice headphones.
Yeah. I really enjoyed listening to them today, and I haven't tried them in the mall yet, but I have a feeling that they'll work out great.
There is something to be said for no wires. I mean, that is nice. I just have a pair of cheap, stick them in your ear wireless Bluetooth headphones with a wire that wraps, so it's like two little buds that stick in each ear and then a wire that connects behind your neck, that I'll sit at work and just kind of cram one in my ear so I can still hear what's going on around me, and you know, if I've got to get up and walk over to somebody, it's nice to not have to worry about the cord pulling my phone, and it's got the little inline controller so that you can pause and all of that fun. I mean, that is nice. And I will say that I do kind of miss the headphone jack. I wish my phone were a little less courageous, because it would be nice to not have to have a dongle to plug in, you know, regular headphones. I got a bunch of regular headphones and I only have one dongle. I still haven't broken down and bought another dongle. So, I don't know. I don't know.
I hear you.
Yeah, Todd is pointing out that his feature phone, his flagship phone, has a courageous port.
Yeah, it's not or, very not
no,
very
a non-courageous, uncourageous
cowardly.
Port.
It's a cowardly 3.5-inch port.
The cowardly 3.5-inch port.
Sorry, 3.5 millimeter port. Sorry.
Yeah, 3.5-inch port. There wouldn't. It's a huge port. Check out the size of that port. I know that you had a story in here, Todd, from a while back from one of your favorites over at Malden Economics about how Trump's FDA chief could save my life, and I need to know what something Trump's FDA somebody might do that's good for me.
it's our buddy Patrick Cox again, who kind of you know, science or technology and such. And he titled the article, Trump's FDA chief could save your life. And of course, my comment is, well, yeah, a lot of things could happen. But President-elect Trump's cabinet appointments are generating a great deal of controversy and attention, which makes sense because we've had 8 years of Democrat appointments. So now the choices are going in a different direction, and that'll be a little bit controversial. And one of the first names leaked was Jim O'Neill of Mithril Capital, and he believes in progressive approval of new medicine. So basically what this means is after a clinical trial, the phase one clinical trial, where the drug is proved mostly safe, currently then there are phase two and phase three trials, which expand it and basically gather more data and try to prove that the medicine is like really, really completely safe. Okay. Which interestingly, I got invited to do a study, and I'm still thinking about whether I'm going to participate in that, but that's a whole other issue. But the point being that, you know, you have to spend a lot of money. It's getting close to $1 billion basically to go through all three of these phases. And there are entrenched companies that benefit from that. Big Pharma is one, because obviously if it takes $1 billion to get a drug to market, there's only a few companies that can actually spend that capital to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, there was another gentleman, a former FDA chief, Eschenbach. Andrew Eschenbach, and he wanted to do the progressive drug approval, which basically means you go through phase one, but phase two and phase three are basically tested as you sell the drug to end consumers, and you continue to gather data to make sure that it's safe and efficacious. And so Japan actually took that approach now. And so once the drug is in use after the kind of the phase one passing, anybody can or buy it, and they monitor it as patients and the doctors disclose the data on how it works out in the field. And so we're paying more for available drugs because companies have to recoup the costs mm-hmm. from the system. Estimates of the average cost of one new medicine range from $1 to $4 billion. I didn't even realize that $4 billion was even on the scale now.
Wow. Whew. And that's for a drug that's gone through all three phases, like a current yes. drug.
And also with this particular system, regulatory system, if you fail any of those phases, then that data disappears. Because nobody wants it known that, oh, we had a drug and we failed. And so another company might go down the exact same development path and have to go kind of the same exact thing, and they might fail too.
Not plus, knowing someone obviously, else has already done it and right. spent $1 billion.
Exactly. And furthermore, anything that fails, you still have to recoup that in R&D costs and sales in the future. You know, if
right.
if two fail and one successful, you have to make all your money by pricing the one that's successful. So there are some advantages to go into a more progressive approval system. And there's some other things in here about, let's see, genomics.
Okay.
Look at the future as we've been able to actually map the genome for cheaper and cheaper. We're going to be able to develop more personal drugs, you know. So instead of saying, okay, this drug works on the population of North America generally, it'll be, here, Todd, here's a formulation that works for your particular genome. So how in the world are we going to test that under the current regulatory framework? Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to have to probably change to something new anyway as we approach the more personalized medicine approach.
Well, you know, and I suppose to point out too, I mean, there are drugs that make it through that are prescribed widely, and then somebody realizes, hey, we looked at the broad-ranging statistics and oopsie, this drug has a higher incidence of people falling over dead of heart attacks. And the one that comes to mind, I think, is Vioxx, which was prescribed widely and then quickly pulled off the market when they realized that there was a high correlation of, I think it was sudden heart attack with people who were taking Vioxx. And I know that there was just in the news recently-ish within the last 60 days that they were looking at another one. Was it... it's another pain reliever, arthritic type drug, maybe Celebrex, but don't quote me on that, where there was some concern that it might have the same issues and I guess has just been ruled to be generally safe and it's not going to be pulled off the market. But I mean, in theory, those drugs go through this rigorous testing and still sometimes the side effects are pretty bad. And obviously drug combinations, I know there was that issue, 10, 15 years ago with Fen-Phen, where you take two drugs that are relatively safe by themselves, Phentermine and Phenergan, or I don't remember the other Fen and Fen-Phen, and put them together, hey, you lose weight, but it also damages your heart valve. So,
right. You
know, that's bad.
And then you have kind of the other end of the spectrum is like beta blockers were in use in Europe for years before they finally got approved here. Mm-hmm. And you probably had more deaths related to heart disease while we were waiting for that to get approved on this side of the pond. Another one that Mr. Cox brought up was that there are breakthroughs that could save millions of lives, reduce medical costs, and they're just stalled right now. And one of the, two of the most important areas of research are geroprotectors, if I wrote that right, and induced tissue regeneration. Induced tissue regeneration in particular, I thought had a lot of potential based on what Mr. Cox wrote. And it's an emerging technology that could reactivate the embryonic healing powers hidden deep in your DNA. We kind of touched on this with the spinal cord repair, and it's one of the same Dr. West, who is continuing to work on this ability to basically tell your cells, you know, hey, you're not adult cells anymore, you're an embryo again, and they'll be able to restore eyes, hearts, joints, skin, livers. It's kind of controversial because we're not used to thinking of medicine in that way, and it sounds so sci-fi, I guess, but it would be great if we could go down that path and find a way to, you know, basically harvest the cells in your own body and they can fix themselves. It took West about 20 years after he invented the stem cell that we talked about with the spinal cord repair to get it through the regulatory maze.
Wow. Yeah, I feel like we can't go the complete opposite way. And I've heard, you know, prominent people like John Stossel is one who has advocated for the abolishment of the FDA and just basically let the free market sort it out. And if a company is selling a bad drug, then people will quickly stop buying from that company and all the problems will be worked out, which I don't agree with that. But, you know, at the same time, taking 20 years to, you know, work through the system when you've got, you know, that type of potential impact, that seems not like a good solution in the other extreme, too. I don't know.
I think what we're on the cusp of is just that the FDA is going to have to change and modernize, especially as boomers age and they are more interested in these types of medicines and drugs that can stave off or maybe even reverse aging. You know, at some point, people are not going to stand for the bureaucrats holding back medicine. If enough people complain, the FDA is going to have to change. I just don't know how long it'll take.
You know, so here's a real question, and I don't want to delve too deep into the world of politics, so I'm almost a little hesitant asking the question, but with the Republicans in charge of the House and the Senate and the White House, typically, they are not known for progressive therapies and, you know, embryonic stem cell research and things of that nature. How much of a halting effect could there be from the Republican Party being in control of government right now? I mean, is there a concern that there will just be a brake pumping happening because of the mindset, the core mindset of the party, that constituents don't want none of that monkeying with godlike stuff, and so the politicians don't.
Yeah, it could go that way, but like the article talks about this first, and this has not been officially approved, of course, and obviously any appointee has to get through the Senate as well.
Right.
But if this is the type of person that Trump would nominate for a bureaucratic regulatory chief, then it would go in more of the direction of getting things to the market more quickly. Mm-hmm. And the bureaucrats in our system have a lot of the power. You know, Congress has to actually really kind of get its act together to stop the regulatory agencies from getting rules through. So if you have that type of person who's looking more to change the process in charge at the FDA, then you're likely to move in that direction. Still, it's not guaranteed by any means, but that would be, an interesting way for the FDA to go.
Yeah, that is interesting stuff. And I feel like we are on the cusp of some amazing breakthroughs with combining genomics with medicine. So it's amazing to see where we are now and where we could go in the very near future.
I plan to live forever.
You laugh, but there are people that are seriously researching that phenomenon. I know Aubrey de Grey is he has a fancy word I think he's made up for himself, but basically researching immortality and making it so that you don't die because you get old. You die because you think you're invincible and step out in front of a cement mixer, which, let's face it, wouldn't be a great way to go.
Climb up 30 feet into a tree to retrieve a drone at night. With a saw in your hand.
I'm not going to live that down, am I? Nope.
No.
Not at all. I think we've been going for a while, guys. What do you think? Do you want to do any more stories, or do you want to wrap it up for this week and ease people back into it now that the holidays are behind us?
I just want to throw one out real quick. And just that CES is going on.
Yes.
And the Qualcomm Snapdragon 835 is a new processor that they're showing off for 2017. It's 10 nanometers down from 14 nanometers on the 820, which is what's in my phone, the Snapdragon 820.
Might as well just throw that thing right in the trash.
Yeah. It's just
14 nanometer.
It looks very sexy. They're thinking about it. It's probably going to be a 20% performance uplift. Since it's so much smaller, now you could get a little bit more battery in your phone with a smaller footprint, much more power efficient. And so you can do thinner phones, so you can get rid of the headphone jack if you want to. Anyway, I'm very excited about that, and I think that'll be really neat. I know Asus has already got a phone announced that's going to have the 835 in it, and we'll see what else people come up with. But
so I've got a question: at what point are you getting down to smaller than light can go to create those CPU dies? Because I thought 14 nanometers was starting to get close to the limits of physics with using light to create those die masks. So 10 nanometers? Can you go smaller than that?
I don't know, but if you look at some of the infographics they've got on this link that I put in the show notes, in 5 years they've gone from this 28 LP down to 10. It looks just so much smaller. And then you think about how small it actually is. I don't know. It's really, to me, it's really exciting. And that's why I'm a tech geek, I guess. But
yeah, that's amazing.
5 days of music playback, 7 hours of VK, 4K video streaming. We'll see. Obviously, these are all,
they're saying this is what the CPU is capable of.
Yes, exactly right. Wow. In their perfect, probably in their perfect laboratory testing, et cetera, et cetera. But still, it's I think it's pretty exciting. I can't wait to see what manufacturers do with the phones that they put it in.
That's amazing. So you're right. You go from down to 20 nanometers, 14 down to 10. That's amazing. That's really cool. I need to educate myself a little bit more on some of this new stuff. I have strayed from the hardware world And I just am not aware of all the stuff that's going on there. I know, I think, Jeff, you had a story months ago about the, what were they calling it, cross-point memory that was some new, that stuff's mind-boggling. How do they do that? We need to find some of those smart people and bring them on the show and talk to us, because I can't even get my head around how you come up with that stuff.
I'm not sure I can understand them.
I sure like to listen to them and sound like an idiot asking questions. Okay, well, Jeff, why don't you tell us what you love?
So I'm going to dust off an oldie but goodie. Just to kind of get into a little bit of the story of why I'm dusting off this oldie but goodie. You know, after the new year and everything, we were doing some cleaning out, and we're going through the bookshelves trying to whittle it down to where we can actually fit the books in the bookshelf the correct way, and make it look a little nicer. And so I was, you know, throwing some books in a bin to be donated. And one that I could not get rid of happens to be by David Eddings. It's the whole series is called The Belgariad. It's a series of 5 books. It's followed up by The Malorian, which I can also recommend. Another 5 books, and then there's 2 offset books. So 12 books in total around these same characters. But man, it is one of the best fantasies, one of my favorite fantasies, one that I've read several times, and I'm reading again now. It is, you know, fairly simplistic writing. It is not, you know, anything like The Hobbit that you're going to, you know, spend hours and hours tolling over by any stretch of the imagination. As a matter of fact, I started reading book 1 today, this afternoon, and I'm more than halfway done. So it's quick, but, it has a good story, a good setting of the world, and great character development, which I always, it is what brings me into the story. It's nothing. It's basic fantasy storyline, but I really enjoyed the world that he created and the characters. So, highly recommend it. It's called The Belgariad. It's by David Eddings.
That's very cool. My one gripe, and I went to the Amazon page to look it up. You can't get it on an e-format.
Yeah, it's kind of an old book. You couldn't even buy the books like 6 months ago at all.
Oh,
so
they at least
they finally started reprinting them again, because it was kind of frustrating, because I had misplaced the first book, I have all the other ones. So I did happen to pick up a copy today at Barnes & Noble. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Barnes & Noble still
do exist.
We can stay in business for another month. Someone bought a book.
So yeah, that's my recommendation. It's good.
Very cool.
Love it.
How about you, Todd? What do you love?
Yeah. So just to pile on, I've read the series at least a couple times, maybe more. And also my wife has read it, and we can both recommend it. So love the Eddings universe. It's some great books. I love, this came up at our, that I mentioned that gathering we had on the 30th, I think off air, but a TV show that I missed that somebody made me aware of recently. It's called The IT Crowd, and it's British humor, so it's right up my alley. I think they maybe came out in 06 or 08 or something. So I've been rewatching them. It stars Chris O'Dowd, who was the police officer in Bridesmaids, if you saw that movie. Mm-hmm. And his tagline in the show, he works the IT support desk, and he always answers the phone, "Hello, this is the IT support desk. Have you tried turning it off and turning it back on again?" it's amazing how much that, how many times that actually fixes your problem, which that ended up being one of the things that I tried with the Bright House Wi-Fi issue. And sure enough, after unplugging my router and then rebooting my computer, everything worked fine again. It was just amazing. So, hopefully I can convince Jacob to put this. There's one, if you're not sure if you want to watch the whole thing, just watch the 3-minute clip that I've put in the show notes to see if you'll like it. So, give it a try if you like technology things or IT things. I find it very funny.
Yeah, I am late to the party on that as well. I know of it, but I have never watched it. So I will link this clip and give it a look. I have heard good things about it. It's just one of those that it's kind of been out there in the periphery of, oh yeah, the IT crowd, but I've never sat down and watched. Is it available on Netflix or Amazon or something like that?
It is. It's Netflix. Most of it's on YouTube, but the quality is much better on Netflix. So if you have a Netflix account, that's what I'm watching it on.
Cool. I will check that out. Very cool. What I love is a neat little piece of hardware. I don't know if you guys are aware of the Raspberry Pi computers. There's a newish one out. I guess it's been out for 3-4 months now. It is the Raspberry Pi 3 Model B. And what it is a low-power computer, and it has the following specs. It has a 1.2 gigahertz, 64-bit quad-core ARM CPU. It has built-in Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. It's got a gig of RAM. It has 4 USB ports. It has a 40-pin I/O header that you can use to hook up and do all kinds of fun things if you really want to get into hardware hacking. It has an HDMI port on it. It'll do full HD. It has an Ethernet port, and it has a 3D graphics core GPU built into the system on a chip. And all of that is packed into a whopping 3.3 inch by 2.2 inch rectangle. Mm. So you get a whole lot of PC and not a whole lot of space. And the best
if it's not UHD, I'm not interested.
it also doesn't have a headphone jack.
It does have a headphone jack, actually. And what's really cool, the headphone jack doubles as composite out. So you can buy a special cable if you want to hook it up to an old school TV. There is a project out there, and I can't remember the name of this project, but basically it turns it into a ROM emulator. And you can hook it up to an old monitor and put some joysticks on it, and you can play all of the classic arcade games. I say full HD. It may go higher than that, Jeff. I don't know its highest resolution.
I know some people have used this to build like old gaming cabinet type things.
Absolutely.
So,
And like I said, the best part is it's going to set you back $35. A couple of bucks more if you want the official power supply, because it does take a beefy power supply. It has a micro USB port on it, but it requires a 2.5 amp power supply. And most of the little cell phone chargers and what for, they'll only put out an amp, maybe 2 amps. And this thing really needs the 2.5 amps.
I really expect that for you to have a Pac-Man cabinet arcade game. This Raspberry Pi.
That actually may be a project that I work on later this year. So what I originally bought it for, there is a project out there called FPP. It stands for originally stood for Phantom Pi Player, and now it just stands for Phantom Player, or Falcon. I'm sorry, Falcon Pi Player, and now it's just the Falcon Player. And what it is, this little tiny computer board will output up to 512,000 channels of lighting control. So people are running their whole Christmas lighting shows off one of these little cards, running this FPP software. So I bought one to tinker with that. And in the meantime, it's not Christmas. I've got some downtime. I found another project called Pi-hole. And what Pi-hole does is it turns it into a DNS server that has over 105,000, I believe, blacklisted 104,768 blacklisted domains. So you put this, next to your router, and you make some minor configuration tweaks. And when I say it's easy to set up, I mean literally like 20 minutes start to finish. And then you get a DNS server that you point all your computers to. Basically, you just point your router to it, and then all your computers just get it through the magic of DHCP. And it will block advertising in line, and it happens automatically. And you get a nice little graph on there, and you can see what domains are being blocked and what IPs are hitting them. And if there's a website that you need to grant access to, you can whitelist it. And if there's a website that's getting through, you can intentionally blacklist it. At home, we're not seeing ads anymore on anything. It just happens seamlessly. So like there's a few games, iOS games that I play that have ads in them, and they're gone. And there's one game that I've been playing. It's an Angry Birds game that they've been advertising all this crap, and now it can only show the little 15-second built-in Angry Birds ad. It doesn't have the ability to go out and hit double-click or whoever they're using. So, yeah, it just blocks all your advertising. And like I'm looking at my dashboard, and so today I've had 425 blocked DNS queries. I've had 3,254 total DNS queries. 13.1% of my queries were blocked. I could go and I could drill down and I could find out, you know, what's being blocked and, you know, why and who. And anyway, it's a neat thing if you've just got, I mean, that's a real world application that you can use and do something, you know, tangible with. And, you know, if you are new to the world of like Linux, you want to learn it, $35 gets you in. You just need a mouse, a keyboard, and a monitor. You got some practical real world programs like, you know, this Pi-hole package, or like Jeff mentioned, the game emulators. There's all kinds of cool stuff you can do with it, and it is super cheap and like remarkably a powerful little computer. I would get it down and show you, but it's kind of stuck up on my shelf. But it is, I mean, it's a tiny little thing. I mean, it's, you know, 3.5 inches by 2.5 inches. It is so cool. It's a lot of fun to play with, and I highly recommend it. So that is what I love, the Raspberry Pi 3. Go take a look at one if you have not looked at one before. So I think we are at the end of another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. If you have a question, a comment, a rant, we would love to hear from you. And you can do that at our call-in line. That number, as always, is 317-643-1212. You can follow us on Twitter at No Better Show. You can go to our blog, www.nobettershow.com. You can send us an email. We love when you participate in the conversation. And that email address, as always, is feedback@nobettershow.com. We read them all, and if yours is interesting, we'll read it on the air and make you internet famous. If you like the show, tell your friends, your podcast listening friends, your non-podcast listening friends, tell everyone, maybe get it tattooed on your, you know, forehead. That's always good. And then do the iTunes thing. Go and leave us a review. Give us a couple stars. That helps us continue to grow and goes a long way. Hopefully, you guys had a great holiday season and are ready to get back to the real world now, and you have just listened to the No Better Than Average podcast, so hopefully now you know better than average too. Have a great week, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Talk to you later.
So, if you guys are ready, we can start whenever.
I better pull up a crib sheet. I don't trust myself yet.
It's only been like 6 months.
I know.